Hey, it's Garen here. Inflation keeps rising. There won't be a better time than right now to replace the roof following the storm damage. Let the Shamrock team treat you to a free inspection and we'll replace the damage with the best roof at the best price. One call does it all at shamrockroofer.com.
Impress your friends, amaze your coworkers, make your family proud. Here's what you need to know.
I'ma tell you what you need to know. I'ma tell you what you need to hear.
Fourth quarter of the program begins right now as we finish strong here on a Monday. Time to get you the things you need to know before we talk to our man David Lesky from Inside the Crown. We'll talk some Royals baseball with him as the Royals playing 500 ball against the big boys. We'll see how excited David Lesky is about this development. Let's get you the things you need to know. It's brought to you by our friends at Family Leisure, K10 and Ridgeview. Dennis and his staff, absolutely the best in the business. Mention 810, save even more. Patio furniture, of course, they've got the best selection of the best patio furniture in town. Locally owned and operated for more than a quarter century, it is Family Leisure. Hot tubs, spas, pools. Got a great big spa sale, hot tub sale going on right now. Go to K10 and Ridgeview. See them in person. Find them online at familyleisure.com. A little Royals news to lead us off, Kay.
Royals have scratched catcher Sal Perez from tonight's lineup with back tightness that came out within the last half hour or so. Royals have also recalled right-handed pitcher Jonathan Bolin from Omaha and option right-handed pitcher Will Klein back to Omaha. Bolin will make his second major league start ever tonight, 3-1 with a 2.57 ERA and four starts this year at Omaha. He has been up before, so he will not be player number 1,000. But number 999 goes back to Omaha.
Yes. Some Royals moves. And we knew this was happening. We knew Bolin was going to get the call. Mm-hmm. Klein was up just to give an extra arm out of the bullpen, kind of massaging that 26th spot on the roster.
Yep.
Would that be fair to say?
I think that's a good word.
You massage it.
I think it's an apt description.
Royals at Jays tonight, 640. Toronto minus 165. Royals plus 140 with youngster Jonathan Bolin on the bump. Uriel Rodriguez for the Jays. He's 0-1 with a 386. Bolin's at 21 Ks and 21 innings. He's been pretty good down at Triple A. He ought to be. He's 27 years old.
Right.
Did go through Tommy John. Kind of struggled coming back from that for about a year and a half. Has been good this year and looks like a viable candidate for a Bobby Keppel type surprise start, the Bobby Keppel phenomenon.
Yeah, Jay's first goal. Time up.
Some 27-year-old career minor leaguer is going to come up here and beat us. I don't think so. Let's go get some booze, boys. Have a night on the town. We got easy peasy on the bump. Then they come in hungover and bowling deals.
Had the night off last night because it was a Sunday. We're not hitting the bars in Toronto. Sure.
That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah.
That's what I'm hoping.
I'm good with that.
A couple
of hammered batters wandering into the on-deck circle.
Four starts, 21 innings, so he's averaging just over five innings per start. We'll see how deep he can go against a pretty good Blue Jays lineup. Royals took 3 of 4 from the Jays last week in Kansas City after dropping the first one, won three in a row, all by one run.
And thoroughly shut down Toronto's bats after that early uprising on Monday. They had a couple of runs or three runs early on Tuesday, and I think they only scored three runs the rest of that series. Now, one of them was in a rain-shortened game, but they really broke those Jays' bats off those last three nights.
Yeah. Boys in blue back at it. Again, 5-5 in their first 10 of a 19-game stretch against teams over 500. That's what good teams do. They go 500 against the big boys. They dominate the little guys, the little bad teams. That's what the Royals have done so far this year. They are certainly, if not going to be a playoff team, they're impersonating one early in the year. We'll see if they can keep it up tonight in Toronto. The Kansas City Chiefs have signed tight end Travis Kelce to a 2-year extension worth $34.25 million. Kelce now signed through 2027. He'll be 38 if he sees it to the end of that deal. 24, 25, 26, 27, 38.
I think he will.
That's what it says here.
No, I'm sounds like, is he going to be? You're looking at, like, sometimes the kind of question you would ask is, does he play through all 4 years? I think he will.
That's getting down towards the end of it.
I was kind of expecting that kind of a question. That's why I was thinking about it already ahead of time.
We'll see if he has some kind of injury that changes his mind early in the – you know, he talked about contemplating retirement as the season went along. Early in the year, he's like, I'm going to play as long as I can. Guys like that usually play 1 year more than they're super productive.
Yeah. And the ramp, the down ramp, the off ramp is really steep.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, guys just can't play.
By the way, the Chiefs, Xavier Worthy, their first-round pick, is already in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. Well, at least his jersey and shoes that he wore during his record-breaking 40-yard dash at the Combine have been sent to Canton, 4.21.
Yep.
The fastest 40 in the history of the Combine. First-ever artifacts collected from a Combine accomplishment.
Pretty good.
You know, eventually, someone's got to run so fast that their skeleton just runs right out of their skin, right?
You think?
It's possible.
I think that's how that works.
There will come a number. Where's the number that you can't, that physics does not allow the breaking of? And someone's going to hit a number that's going to stand for 20 years, probably.
Yeah.
We won't be around.
Let's hear a little Brett Veach, Todd Lebo, talking to him about drafting Hunter Norzad. That's the center from Penn State. Also played guard, also played tackle. Todd asking him if it might mean that Creed Humphrey is, I don't know, maybe a question at center.
I want to ask you about the kid from Penn State, interior center, possibly guard. Creed had a few snap issues last year here and there. Is this bringing someone in to push him? What position do you see Hunter playing at?
Well, really, I mean, when you lose a guy like Nick Allegretti, I mean, those guys are hard to replace, and, you know, like some of the things Mike Caliendo did last year. But when you have a guy that, these are long seasons, and these are week in and week out, there's a physical toll that these players have to undertake. So it's one of those things where it was always comforting knowing you had a guy and a player like Nick Allegretti, who, if needed or pressed into service like he was last year in the playoffs, can come in and can play center, can play guard, and get you out of the game there. And you know, when you look at Hunter and his career, I mean, the kid started out playing tackle, and then he transferred to Penn State, played guard, played center. So extremely smart kid. I think he had a mechanical engineering degree. But one of those guys that, you know, we feel has a tremendous amount of upside, but also almost seeing like that Nick Allegretti role where I think he can come in and, you know, certainly we'll compete like the rest of the guys do, but I think we have a high amount of confidence in him, knowing his background, knowing how smart he is, that he can come in and play quality reps and provide, you know, quality starts if needed.
Didn't really
address the Creed Humphrey situation, but
didn't shoot it down either.
No, he didn't shoot it down. He twice went to Nick Allegretti comp. So stressing that that's kind of the guy they see him as, but he didn't shoot it down.
Brett Veach says extending Travis Kelce was important for everyone at all levels of the organization.
It's hard to put into words what Travis means to this organization, this city, and was certainly a priority to adjust his contract for us, and it was something that was important for Clark. So very fitting that Travis is now the highest paid tight end in these 2 years. I want to thank his agents, Michael and Greg, for all their hard work. Chris Shea, Jack Walloff on our side for all their hard work. So, again, just a really special day and moment for this organization to once again recognize arguably one of the greatest tight ends to ever do it.
How long do you see Travis playing for the Chiefs? And not just playing, but being the player he's been and everything else he's been for the organization. How long do you see that continuing?
Well, I mean, every now and then you have one of these guys that are outliers, and certainly Travis is one of those players. It's funny, it's not even May yet, and today we had a chance to get out there in phase two, and guys were out there running around, and Travis was the first guy in line, and, I mean, he looked like he was 28 years old. And again, the odds of someone playing this far into the 30s are very low, but it does happen, and it happens with just you know, unicorns in the profession, and Travis is one of those. And we'll certainly celebrate this with him, and hopefully we can ride this thing even longer. So we'll just have to wait and see. But I've shown no signs of slowing down. Everyone, notices the kind of postseason he had, and he just found that extra gear. And, you know, these special ones, these special players are always able to find, you know, that extra gear. And again, I mean, if anybody could do it, Travis can.
Yeah, he talked about two things, metaphorically, not slowing down, and he find an extra gear. I mean, it was just one play, but the last one of the last drives he played at the end of a long season, he reached his top speed, that third down conversion on the field goal drive that tied the game at the end of regulation. It was one of the fastest plays he'd played all year. So he can still find that gear, certainly, when he needs to, even at 34.
One of the fourth-round picks, Jaden Hicks, a safety from Washington State, was a guy that some people had graded up in the second round. They get him down towards the bottom of the fourth round. Brett Veach said they were surprised they still had a chance to draft Hicks that late.
Well, Hicks, just the value was too great there. You know, this is where you just want to stay true to your board and take the best player available. And, you know, he's one of those players that, I mean, you know, you look left to right in your board and you have, again, needs at receiver and O-line, D-line, and corner. And then all of a sudden you get to your pick and you have a player that is at the safety position. And we have some really good safeties here on this team. But just from a talent perspective and just long-term planning perspective, I mean, it was just too good of a player to pass up. I mean, he's a guy that, I mean, you can do a lot of different things with. I mean, he's a big kid. He has good range. He's physical. He can play down high. I mean, he can play down low in the box, and, you know, he can play in the back end. And another really smart, intense player. And you know, with the special teams roles, you know, imagining him on special teams, I'm sure Tobe is going to have a blast with him. So it was just one of those situations where when we got to our pick, we just want to stay true to our board and take the best player available. And he was by far the best player available.
Yeah, first spot they got to where they didn't really need the spot, but he'd look around and go, really?
I think they needed it. Yeah, I think they need the spot.
Yeah, he probably overplayed that a bit, but it wasn't one of those things really, we really got to get a safety here. He's, okay, if nobody else is going to take him. Well, thank you.
I think they may have thought about him around before, but when he got to that point, he was, you know, probably truly actually the best player on the board. But with Mike Edwards leaving, with Brian Cook coming off an ACL, and with Justin Reed going into the final year of his deal, there's certainly a reason to take a safety for sure. All right, draft is done. Veach reflected on what's been done so far this offseason.
We accomplished a lot between the free agency period and the draft, and now I think we'll have a chance to really evaluate these young guys and evaluate these, you know, new players we brought in on our 90-man signings and right after the season, and you know, with the undrafted free agent guys we got. So we'll have a chance to evaluate this team. I think we spoke about this over the weekend. I don't think you're ever satisfied with what you have as a roster, and there's always ways to improve. And I think the important thing is just to make sure that we have competition and battles at every position group coming into going into St. Joe. So, you know, now we get to spend the next few weeks of watching these guys and seeing how they move out there. And it's a good gauge to predict how these competitions will go. And I think once we get through the next few phases of these OTAs, we'll huddle up as a staff, both personnel and coaching, and see if, you know, we have enough competition at all these positions, and you know, if we need to go in a different direction before training camp, we will. But I think now we're excited with where the roster is and look forward to the OTA, the final OTA periods.
All right, point blank then, what about a couple of veterans, Mecole Hardman, Donovan Smith? What about the possibility of re-signing either one of them?
You know, we'll use this OTA period to kind of assess that. I think we feel good right now. I mean, look, a lot of these guys were playing college football last year. So I think how they do here in the meetings and how they do with just kind of absorbing the information and can they translate out there in the field is a big deal. Now, listen, we don't have pads on, so some of it, you know, may tail into St. Joe's and to training camp. But I think for right now, I think we're going to let these young guys go out there and see what they can do and how much they can absorb. And if we feel good about it, I mean, this will be kind of where we go from St. Joe's, and then we'll be able to adapt and adjust if needed. But I don't think anything would be imminent.
All right, one more. We want to hear from Clark Hunt, his comments over the weekend. I think the biggest one, the most important one, is about what is the future for the Chiefs. Is it only in Arrowhead? Clark Hunt said it means a lot, but it's not the only possible answer.
Arrowhead is a special place for our family and our fan base. That was one of the reasons that we focused on it. with the last effort, but going forward, it may make more sense for us to be in a new stadium. It's a special place for our fan base, and I believe it could be a special place for our fan base for another 25 years with the right renovation. But we're just going to have to be open-minded in how we approach this, and that may involve a new stadium, and it could be an open-air stadium or it could be a dome stadium.
There it is. It's all on the table. It's all on the table now when you make that comment. All right, let's take a break. David Leskey's coming up next. Royals, they dropped 2 out of 3 over the weekend, but I'll state it again, 5-5 in their first 10 against winning teams. Does David Leskey think they're going to keep it up? We talk about that next with the author of...
Hey, everybody. Joe Spiker, owner of Easton Roofing here. For almost 10 years, we've been a locally owned and operated family business. At Easton, we work on every job with one thing in mind. Integrity matters. I grew up in Central Kansas, was raised on the values of respecting hard work. At Easton, we always make decisions based on the ethical, right thing for the customer. That's what integrity means to us. So if you have any questions about your roof, give me and my team a call. 913-257-5426. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
Inside the Crown.
He's taken Larry King to a Prince concert. He's eaten Dairy Queen while watching a Duke game.
Certainly Duke and Duke.
He's seen the Princess Bride with his friend Earl.
Inconceivable.
Yeah, it's safe to say he's obsessed with the Royals. From Inside the Crown, it's David Leskey on the program.
David Leskey is brought to you by Gann Asphalt and Concrete, Kansas City's nationally recognized full-service paving and pavement maintenance contractor, making parking lot problems disappear in Kansas City since 1994. Free consultations, no commissions, in-house crews, and every project comes with a written warranty. Find them online at GannAsphalt.com or call 816-484-3338.
All right, let's talk some Royals baseball with our man David Leskey from Inside the Crown. Joins us each and every Monday here in the program. David, how are you, my friend?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing very good. And the Royals... they're not doing bad either. I know they dropped 2 out of 3 to the Tigers over the weekend, but my bigger picture is the 19 games they set sail on against winning teams after really beating up on some bad clubs, or at least teams that were playing bad baseball. I think the Twins, who actually took 2 out of 3 from them, are a better team than what their record looked like, and they're showing that now that they get a chance to beat up on some bad teams. But 5-5 in the first 10 of 19 against winning teams, I'm okay with this. I'm still pretty bullish. I mean, I'm not at the point where I think they're a playoff team yet, but I'm bullish on the fact that this is no mirage. Where are you?
Yeah, I mean, bigger picture, not much bigger. There's not a huge picture at all in general. But and they started 9-4, and they were hitting the daylights out of the ball. And then the offense kind of went cold. But with some, I mean, they're even in the cold stretch, they're scoring 8 here, 7 here, 9 here. But without much offense, 8-8. So I feel that goes back to the start of that Mets series. And I kind of feel like if you can take advantage of when the bats are hot and go 9-4 and tread water and go 8-8 when they're not, that's how you win 90 games. I mean, that's how you do it. The good teams are teams that don't bury themselves when they're not playing well. And right now, the Royals aren't playing great baseball, and they're not burying themselves. That's what they've done for the better part of the last 30 years. Rainey always has the stat about the 6-game losing streaks in April or first half. I can't remember what it is, but they do it every year. And this year, they're not doing it to this point. I mean, it could still happen. They've lost 2 in a row now, so who knows? It could be 6 in a row by the time Friday comes around, or I guess Saturday. But they're treading water when they're kind of playing subpar baseball, and that's what good teams do.
Yeah, when they've lost 2 in a row and they've been outscored 10-6. They lost 3 in a row earlier, the last 2 against Baltimore and 1 against Toronto. They're outscored 19-10 on that. What we're not seeing is where they just get throttled. Right?
Yeah.
Where it's like, even against the Tigers, they ended up outscoring the Tigers 14-10 in the 3-game series, which speaks to, you know, yes, the Tigers may have taken 2 of 3, but that was clearly a competitive series where you can make a case that the Royals are still the better team.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, look, Chris Stratton, who, by the way, has been pretty darn good most of the time. And I'm not – that doesn't discount opening day. He was bad. He got absolutely destroyed by an umpire in New York. He's had his hiccups. I'm not saying he's perfect, but he's been pretty darn good. They're a typical Chris Stratton outing away from taking 2 of 3 in that series. And things happened. Like, relievers struggle. I think it's interesting from a Royals fan perspective, because I really believe, and I know it's been a decade, I think HDH absolutely ruined the way that Royals fans see relievers. I really do. Because there are some guys who, every so often, there's one or two who are like that group. But the Royals had 3 guys who, if they gave up more than a run in a night, you're thinking, oh, well, Tommy John's around the corner. And that's just not the way the game works. Relievers give up runs sometimes. And we were so privileged to watch that. And I feel like it's still impacting the way we view relievers as a fan base. So I think that's interesting. But, yeah, I mean, look, I'm not going to sit here and say, well, the Royals are a World Series team because they're 8-8 in their last 16. But they're playing, even when playing poor baseball, they're playing decent baseball.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And playing competitive baseball as well. Their depth is being tested now. Salvador Perez, tight back. He's leading them in home runs. He's having an incredible offensive year, 340, and whatever his on-base is, he's now one of the better pitch framers. He's having his best. He's off to his
Almost
best start.
400, 398 on base.
Yeah, he's having his best start to a season, and now back tightness. Maybe just give him the day off and don't play him at first base?
Yeah. I mean, when he came back from the groin injury that was in New York, he DH'd for a few games instead of playing first base. He's been okay at first base, so I don't have a problem with him doing that. I think it might be a couple days, actual days off might be good for him. We'll see. It's Salvador Perez, so a guy who might miss the rest of the season for one injury, Salvi's going to miss like 2 innings probably. So it's hard to say how long this will impact him. But
and then come back and homer the first game back.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, he's got a little bread in him on his returns from injury.
Yeah, I haven't looked that up now that you say that, but you're absolutely right. George Brett always did that, and Salvi does the same thing.
Yeah, I do get a little nervous when it's a back, but he does seem to, like, you know, they announce something like this, and then 2 days later he's back and playing, and everything's fine. I mean, but what do we give? Let's hope he's going to be fine. I mean, are we buying? He started with some good on-base numbers before, and then that kind of whittles away, and he goes back to being his free-swinging self. But I don't know. If you teach a man to frame, can you teach a man to walk? How optimistic are you that, you know, he's made some epiphany when it comes to how he approaches things at the dish?
Well, I don't think he really has in a big way. So his walk rate is 8%, which is, I think it's around league average. I'm not sure what league average is this year, but it's 8-9% somewhere in there. So that's, for Salvador Perez, 8% is otherworldly. But what's interesting, and I looked at this the other day, and I'm pulling it up right now because I hadn't looked back again since. He's still swinging at everything. I mean, like, literally, he was the highest outside the zone swing percentage in baseball. So that hasn't changed. But what's crazy is his strikeout rate is like 11.5%. And so I started looking at that, and I think it's because he's making a lot more contact on pitches outside the strike zone and generally fouling them off, leading to being able to either get a pitch that even he won't swing at, or that he gets one in the zone that he can drive. And the thing that I noticed, and I'm going to keep an eye on this throughout the season, but he's closed his stance up a little bit so he can get to that pitch outside. I mean, in past years, we've seen it. He gets eaten up by pitches, specifically sliders or breaking balls, that drift away. That's where he gets eaten up. But this year, and he's still missing some of them, but this year he's making a lot more contact and fouling them off. We've seen him dump a couple in right field. We saw him, I think it was either yesterday or Saturday, I can't remember now, there was a pitch that was, I think it was like 14 inches off the plate that he lined to first. If Spencer Torkelson had been standing anywhere else, that's a hit. And these are pitches that he wasn't making contact on. And I'm looking at the outside the zone contact numbers right now, and it's interesting. There are a few there are a few different numbers that are out there, but based on Pitch Info, which is an organization, 72% outside the zone contact. Last year it was 56.7%. The highest he's ever been, let's see, he was, oh gosh, he was 85% in 2012, which if you go back to those seasons, those are the years he's hitting 290, 300, 330 his rookie year in 39 games. I mean, he's doing a lot of the things that he did as a rookie and as a young player to hit for a high average while also now incorporating more power than he had back then. And, you know, it's really interesting to see. It's hard for me to look at that and say, okay, this guy who swings at half the pitches outside the zone he sees almost is going to continue to play at this level. But, I mean, he's done things throughout his entire career that everybody goes, well, it's not going to last. And here he is in his age 34 season hitting .340 with a 590-something slugging percentage.
Jonathan Bolin was the fifth of the five pitchers taken to open up that 2018 draft, was it?
Yeah.
Second-round pick out of Memphis. I believe it was Memphis. You know, I kind of heard, well, probably reliever, but we start him out as a starter and see what he can do. Was looking pretty good. Then he had Tommy John. Took him a long time to kind of get him. Like, never really did get going again, even last year, but has been pretty darn good. Where's your optimism on what Jonathan Bolin can do tonight?
He's interesting because back, was it 21 that he got hurt? Or 22? I can't remember now. I think it was 21. He was pitching really, really well. And went down, had the injury, missed the rest of the season. Yeah, it was 21 because then he came back. Wasn't great in 22 when he came back. And then, like you said, last year the command just didn't really come back. And that is one of those things that is, that, you know, the cliche is kind of the last thing to come back. This year, though, he's been really, really good. And I talked to somebody who watches him or has seen him with Omaha this year and said he looks a lot more like the guy from 21 than the guy he saw last year. And I mean, he's got a really heavy fastball, getting a good whiff rate on fastball and slider, and those are his two main pitches. But he also has a sinker that gets a lot of ground balls. He doesn't throw it a ton. And a curve and a changeup that he can use. And I think that he's the type of guy who I don't know that you're ever going to watch one of his outings and walk away and go, man, that was impressive. But then you look in the box score, and it's 6 1/3, 3 runs. Six innings, 2 runs. 7 innings, 4 runs. And you know, the type of pitcher who, honestly, the Royals have a lot of those guys, I feel like. Cole Reagans is the one you walk away and you're impressed by, but everybody else, I mean, yeah, you have a Seth Lugo game on Friday where your jaws dropped from that. But for the most part, there are a bunch of pitchers who you don't think, oh, that wasn't that great of a game, and then you realize, oh, actually, he only gave up 1/6. And Bolin has that type of potential. I don't think he's more than a 3, and that's at best, but I think he can keep you in a game. I was really excited to see him pitching well this year because, like I said, when he got hurt, he was probably my number one pitching prospect in the organization, which
wasn't kind of saying much when that happened.
Right. It's not great for the team that he's the number one, but he was legitimate when he went down with the injury. So, and look, it's the Blue Jays lineup. You feel like they can explode at any time, right? But they haven't. So maybe it's a good lineup to be facing in your, not your big league debut, but your real start debut. He made one start last year. I think he threw an inning. It was an opener situation. But I don't know. I'm excited to see what he can do. Any pitcher who's getting his first real big league exposure, you really don't know what you're going to get. But Bolin commands the ball well. He gets ground balls. He gets the swing and miss. I think he's solid.
What does it say that Daniel Lynch, and by the way, all you got to do is look at the numbers. I think he's given up 5,000 hits and 20-some-odd innings.
It's a pretty rough whip.
Incredibly. I mean, he's just being hit. Everything is being hit.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's been passed up, and are you hearing anything as to what the hell is so horribly wrong right now with Daniel Lynch?
Everything that I hear is that, well, he's just not very good. And it's as simple as that. And it's too bad. It's too bad. It's
terrible. I shouldn't laugh, but it's comedic to hear that's it's as simple as that. Yeah, he's just not good.
Yeah, and I don't know if he's, I mean, the velocity's not really there. It never really came back. I haven't looked at his last outing. I guess he hasn't pitched in a while because Omaha's been rained out for the last week, it feels like. But, yeah, it just, I'm looking 37 hits in 23 and two-thirds innings. So you were off by a little bit. But he's not even striking guys out at AAA. This is a 27-year-old big league pitcher who came into camp ahead of Alec Marsh, ahead of Jonathan Bowman, battling with Jordan Lyles for the fifth starter job. And now when one guy who passed him in spring training goes down, another guy who passed him once the season started is the guy who gets called up. I mean, I don't know what the answer is with Lynch. And I mean, I think, unfortunately for him and for the Royals, the answer is dump him in a trade. You know, you're moving a guy for, I don't know, if they want to go out and talk to the Angels and try to get Taylor Ward to help the outfield, I don't know if that's the best option, whatever, pick a name. And they want this pitcher, say, okay, well, we'll throw in Daniel Lynch if you give us this 18-year-old in rookie ball. And I mean, that's how it's going to end for him, I feel like, because it's just not working. And it's too bad because we've talked about this. Maybe we were all a little bit unwilling to see the blemishes. I know I was, but the fastball just doesn't work. The slider's not as good as it used to be. I mean, it's not a repertoire that works, and it's not working even in AAA right now for him.
I just love the idea of some reporter asking a multi-tiered, nuanced question about why it's not working, and the skipper just going, well, you know, with Daniel, he's just not very good. And the room just being silent.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because just yesterday they announced it was going to be Bowling? I think it was. I was texting with somebody, and I said, what's the deal with Lynch? How did this happen? Is he off schedule or something? And his response was, no, he's just not good. I'm like, okay, well, there's the answer.
God, I mean,
it's hard to overcome that.
Yeah, and listen, not to put it all on his shoulders, Brady Singer has worked out, but you know, we said when they took those five pitchers, and we'll see Jonathan Bowen's going to get a chance to etch his name in there. Chris Bubich will be back from Tommy John a little bit later. Jackson Kowar may go on to be something somewhere else, but he's already broken down after the Royals gave up on him and dumped him.
But you know what? They turned him into Kyle Wright, too. And so there is an aspect of a draft that you draft guys to get big leaguers, whether it's that player or the player they get in a trade.
Right. No, I agree. But we said at that time, if you can get a top of the rotation, not necessarily an ace, but top of the rotation guy, a bottom of the rotation guy, and a reliever, out of those five, that's kind of par for the course. Anything above that, you will have exceeded expectations. I'm not ready to call Brady Singer top of the rotation yet, but I think he's better than bottom of the rotation. So he's kind of in between there. Chris Bubich showed a spark, and that's it, man. That's all they got to show. Like, it's really looking disappointing. We had someone calling about, you know, the Chiefs draft earlier, and they were relating to Brett Beach's swing and misses at some wide receivers to the fact that Dayton Moore took all these pitchers and never could make them go. And, you know, it's not none of them, but in the draft, like, is Brady Singer they drafted Danny Duffy.
Yeah.
They drafted
way
Brady
back.
Singer. Who else did they draft that has come up and started games and been effective? Not like, here, Kowar, you get a chance by default. Daniel Lynch, go give it a shot. Like, who's come up and actually been an effective starter that was drafted by the Kansas City Royals in the Dayton Moore era?
There's Junis, and he...
No. No, there is not.
He does exist.
No.
He
does not count.
He absolutely counts. He had 30 starts in 2018 with a league average ERA.
Okay.
That's effective.
Okay.
I think that I'm not – he hasn't – the career isn't good. I mean, it's fine. The career is totally fine. Look, that career, I think 99% of youth baseball players would kill somebody for that career. But he's had seasons, and the Royals drafted him, but – to that point, that's the answer. It's Jacob Junis. It's not good. it's real bad.
I mean, really, it's him. It's Yordano Ventura out of Latin America, and it's unfortunate, mm-hmm. obviously, for a multitude of reasons, his passing. But we didn't get to see what his career would ultimately be. But, I mean, it's staggering how bad it's been.
Yeah. How far back does that go? I'm looking at their draft.
2006.
So
Luke Hochaver.
Yeah,
well, I mean,
Hochaver.
He didn't have that draft.
Right.
He had influence, he would finally admit, on it.
But the pitchers he's drafted since then.
2007 and beyond.
Yeah. Aaron Crow. Kyle Zimmer.
All-star. Come on.
Sean Manaea, who turned into Ben Zobrist, I think, right? Foster Griffin. Brandon Finnegan. Nolan Watson, Ash Russell, Chris Bubich, Daniel Lynch, Coward, Singer. Now we're up into the more recent guys.
And by the way, those are just the first-round picks. It's okay to draft somebody in a later round and have them go ahead and actually be good.
Right.
Are you sure?
Mm-hmm. And I hear rumors.
Maybe.
I hear rumblings. Okay. But I mean, I
believe you, I guess.
Yeah. but listen, I say that not trying to be flippant. I mean, but it's a problem, but it's one that I do think is getting better. I mean, that's the one thing I do like right now, particularly if they can get Chris Bubich, you know, which will certainly make Dayton Moore's classes look better as well if Bubich can get there, and rightfully so. But they're having success with guys they bring in, making them better. They're having success with guys in the building that were already there that they've taken over, making them better. They're identifying pitching elsewhere. Like, I mean, I'm still quite optimistic that the new crew can identify the pitching.
Yeah, I'm seeing it because, well, look, Bolin is a Dayton Moore pick, but this regime has helped him get back to where he was, which I don't know how much credit they get for that because he's back to where he was before them. So, you know, we'll see. But you look in Double A, Mason Barnett has been really good. Chandler Champlain had a terrible first start. So the numbers are not good, but his last three have been good. And he was really good last season, worked his way up to Double A. I mean, they were able to use a guy, David Sandlin, to go get John Schreiber, which I wasn't a huge fan of that deal because I like the upside of David Sandlin, but Schreiber's been their second best reliever, I guess, this season, which, you know, on a team of 17-12 in second place, you need a second best reliever. That's worth it. I'm liking what we're seeing from the pitching development. It feels like they've kind of figured some things out. And I have a college friend who was in South Bend this week. So he's a scout. He watched the whole Quad Cities versus South Bend series and just kept texting me things. And his response on Saturday was, if you told me this was an expansion team with an entirely new development staff, I'd believe you, because it's totally different than 3 years ago. Yeah. And that to me was huge. It may not work. They may not get there, and that will be bad, and we'll discuss that then. But the signs now, I mean, look at Ben Kudina and his strikeout rate this season. It is jumping. He looks like an actual big league prospect now. I mean, Frank Mozzicato, the walk rate is down. It's three starts. We'll see. I mean, I'm fully willing to say that he could walk five and three innings and whenever he pitches next and we're in trouble. But there are really good signs from most of the guys in the organization.
MJ Melendez, we're talking to David Lesky from Inside the Crown here. MJ Melendez, ice cold. Where's your level of concern?
1 to 10 scale, like 7. He had a good second half, made these adjustments, comes into this year, starts off hot, and not just hot, but in a way that seems sustainable. You know, he's not striking out, he's not swinging and missing as much, he's walking again. And then it's just all gone, and I don't know. I don't know where I haven't sat down and dug in exactly. But I feel like maybe he's just a guy who you're going to get lava hot and glacier cold. I don't know. I don't know what that answer is, but at least he's playing defense now, right? He's not hitting, but at least when he's not hitting, he's not kicking the ball to the corner in left field every time. I suppose that's a plus. But, yeah, I mean, with him, with Nelson Velasquez not hitting, with Hunter Renfroe kind of predictably not hitting, and the Royals right now contending, I mean, that's why I mentioned Taylor Ward earlier. I've been looking at outfielders. I'm going, okay, who's playing on a bad team who can hit and play outfield? Because they need some offense in the outfield. They got none right now.
But is it, I mean, what real prospect are you going to give up to supplement this? Like, don't they need to go further, longer before you say, okay, I'm going to actually go get high impact or get just even impact, just quality, right? I mean, like the Kurt Laskanik, Jason Fraser is one thing, right? But going and getting an outfielder to play every day, that'll cost.
It will cost. And that's why it's not today. I mean, I'm saying if they are, if this extrapolates out to mid-July, where are they looking? And, I mean, there are some options. And there are some options, too, that aren't going to cost a ton. Like, you look at Jesse Winker, who I don't know if he's the best option because he's 2022 MJ Melendez in the outfield. So maybe you don't want that out there. But, I mean, you've got guys who are getting on base. And Winker's not going to cost a lot in terms of a prospect. And there are some guys out there. But, with contention right now, and if they can continue to hang in there, these guys like MJ Melendez, like Nelson Velasquez, like Kyle Isbell, who plays great defense in center field, but you got to hit a little bit. They are on the clock right now because if they continue to contend, the Royals are going to look at that in late July and say, we can't go into the stretch run and hopefully the playoffs with him hitting fifth. Or tonight, I think he moved up to sixth after Salvi went out, but maybe I can't remember actually what the new lineup is, but you can't go into the playoffs counting on that. And so you got to go get somebody. And I'm not, again, I don't know if they're a playoff team or not, but if they stay down this path, they're going to have to make some tough decisions with guys they really like.
Time for our Final Four. It's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System, the official healthcare provider of the Kansas City Royals. Get care from the experts the Royals trust to make the right call. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/Royals. We've got about a minute here. We'll move kind of quick here on the Final Four. Let's start with this. Salvador Perez on base percentage at the end of the year will be what?
Let's go 337, which is huge for him.
Wow. Okay, we're buying it.
Specific number.
His final home run total will be what?
Is he at 7 right now?
Yes.
I'll give him 26. He's been between 23 and 27 most of his career, so I'll go 26. I think he slows down there a little bit.
All right, 26. We'll take that. We'll take that when it's all said and done. He plays how many games?
Just total?
Yeah.
Not catcher, okay. 142. Whew.
Too many.
Finally,
Salvador Perez, Hall of Fame, yes or no?
Oh, that's so tough. I know you want me to have a quick answer. I'm going to say yes because I think he does the work he needs to get there. He's not there yet, though.
Okay, wow. That's a lot of optimism. I love it.
Yeah.
David, you're the man. Great stuff as always. We encourage everybody to check out your great work Inside the Crown on Substack. It's a great read, a lot of high quality, a lot of stuff, and all of it high quality. David, we'll talk.
Hey, everybody. Joe Spiker, owner of Easton Roofing here. For almost 10 years, we've been a locally owned and operated family business. At Easton, we work on every job with one thing in mind. Integrity matters. I grew up in Central Kansas, was raised on the values of respecting hard work. At Easton, we always make decisions based on the ethical, right thing for the customer. That's what integrity means to us. So if you have any questions about your roof, give me and my team a call. 913-257-5426. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
See you again next Monday.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, guys.
We're almost done for the day, but there's just a few more things we'd like to share.
But there's still more.
Here's the kicker.
Here's the kicker of this whole thing.
On the program.
But first, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt end of the hour answer before Hunter Norzad, who was the last player the Chiefs drafted from Penn State.
Ooh, Penn State. Omar Easy.
Mm-mm.
Tamba Hali.
2006.
Chiefs Hall of Famer.
Yep.
Wow.
About to be.
Little Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. Get you some Joe's tonight. JoesKC.com. Best barbecue around. Might I encourage the Rocket Pig? It's my favorite. Get the jumbo. Short end as well. The ribs. By far, their most underrated. They have lots of sandwiches and burnt ends. Get a lot of headlines. But the ribs, absolutely fantastic. Get you some Joe's tonight. It's JoesKC.com. Pick it up at 47th and Mission, 119th and Stringline, or 117th and Row. Send it anywhere in the country as well. JoesKC.com. I'll leave you with this. It's going to be an officially sanctioned fight that will count against the real professional records of the two combatants. I can't wait till this pugilistic dynamo in July.
Yep.
What fight are we talking about?
The July 20th bout between YouTuber-turned-prize fighter Jake Paul and former heavyweight boxing champion Mike Tyson will be classified as a sanctioned professional fight by the Texas Department of Licensing and Regulation. 8 2-minute rounds using 14-ounce gloves.
16 minutes of boxing.
To train for a 16-minute fight, you got to train for 16,000 minutes.
Yeah. Settle down.
16,000.
Settle down. I can't believe that they make it a story. It's officially sanctioned. It's a joke.
Yes.
I mean, I might watch it, but 16 minutes of boxing?
Stop.
It's a freaking joke. And again, I still might watch it.